So now we're live. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And we have with us today a frequent co-host, seeing for the first time ever on video, Mr. Chris McLaughlin, who is repping his own company, Ghost Show Press, on that fashionable Hawaiian shirt. How you doing, Chris?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The professor is good tonight. How are you, sir?
I am doing quite well. Thank you. And we have a special guest for the first time ever, Tom Filsinger, below us. And Tom runs Champions of the Galaxy. Good to see you, Tom.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So your game, I had never heard of before. And I'm just going to be horribly honest and say that until Chris told me about it. But the more I research, you have a huge fan base and a huge following.
Well, you know, we've been doing it. I originally, you know, Chris and I share something in common. We're both professors. And so that's always been my side. Well, I don't know which one of these is my side gig or their right. Or their tag partners. Let's say that. So, I started this in the mid-80s, tried to first sell it to the WWF at the time, and they turned it down and put out a game instead that was a Milton Bradley board game. It was nothing like what it should have been. Mm-hmm. And it's because of that rejection, though, that I thought, well, I'll just create my own characters because I think the game system works. And I did. It combined all my interests at the time, for sure, big time. Comic books, pro wrestling. So it's professional wrestling in the future. We have now 50 game editions because it's an ongoing cosmic saga like Star Wars or anything in that category. And I see you're showing a lot of the stuff that we are. Well, of course, and you can see there that we also did wind up putting out games with the real wrestlers over time as we would sign them individually. Mm. So we've got the real wrestling, we got the Marvel Comics wrestling, and we're working on taking over the universe.
Talk about crossing over to the real world.
Right. I got to do a Chris McLaughlin card sometime. That's what I want.
Oh, God. Oh Lord.
The champion of the galaxy.
Oh, you're too kind. You're too kind. I get by on my vocabulary. If I can finish a guy off with a word nobody's used in 200 years. Yeah, we can do that.
So tell us about the game. I read a lot of reviews and I uncovered sort of an enigma. I don't say enigma, maybe a point of contention, because there are some people claiming it was a card game, some people saying it's an RPG, some playing it's a complaint, contending it's an unholy amalgam of the two. How would you explain it?
I like that last statement. I don't think it's easy to classify either. It has elements of both. Is the first thing you said, well, sir, cards and dice, that's what makes it run. Mm-hmm. But you can play it one of two ways. You can either, like, let's say us three would get together and play matches and have a tournament, and then we're done that evening, and we had fun, I hope. Then, but the way most people play it is as an ongoing promotion, like the WWE Raw or something. They keep a – I do this. I've been doing this now in my own Fed for 30 years at least. And so – I'm on card number, just finished card number 1,100 in my game's history.
Wow.
Well, you know, that's got a rich history of champions, and that's what everybody does. And what they do is they compare to each other. How's this guy doing in your promotion, or what angles are you running with? So to that extent, it has similarities to an RPG, but I've never been one to really worry too much about classifying. So it's just the game is, I think, uniquely what it is.
All right. Cool, cool.
But one thing I can definitely say about it is it's amazing to see this game demoed. I mean, it's just awesome to just sit back and see how quickly people pick it up, how quickly they get into it, and how quickly they're hooked. It's just amazing. It really is. It's such an elegant design, and it's so true to its source material, and it's just so immediately addictive. It's really an amazing design. I've always been quite in awe of it.
No, thank you, Chris. I really appreciate that. I think what helps is that it plays in real time. So that yes. you get a move, you get a reaction. You get a move, reaction. And so it's moving quickly. And yeah. I'd say match times are about the same as they would be in real life. So when I play, I might have a match could end in 3 or 4 moves. That's possible. Mm-hmm. But it also could go 45 minutes. I love going to conventions and playing it with people. I miss that. In fact, I did it a lot when I lived in the Northeast. Now I live in Sedona, Arizona. And I've done some conventions here, too. But I used to go to Gen Con and Motor City and Origins and everything in between. And it was so much fun. You went to a lot of conventions, didn't you, Chris?
They had to cancel Gen Con to get me to stop me from going this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is a great con. And it's grown so much.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, it's fun seeing the demographics change. You know, like the biggest show local show I go to is Baltimore Comic Con, and again, it's another one they had to cancel to keep me from going. That's the only one I missed was the one they canceled. The two they've canceled, excuse me. And you know, we were going to the first ones, and it was all like all older guys, and it would leave you so depressed. Like, oh, will anyone know what a comic book is in 10 years? Uh-huh. And now you go, and people are bringing their families, and it's, you know, it's wonderful just to see how these nerdy things that I've loved since I was a small child, they're flourishing now like never before. It's been really amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, good on you for living in Sedona. That is like one of my top 3 retirement spots.
Oh, good. I hope we'll see you sometime.
You can be.
It was the first time I'd ever been here when we moved here, and I fell in love with it immediately. And so, then I got a job teaching at Northern Arizona University. And I didn't want to just be home by myself working on games all the time. I, you know, wanted to be doing something and meeting people. And then I fell into I went beyond that. I started part time, wound up getting hired full time. And I don't think I'm going to do that much longer because I really want to focus again on just games and other game ideas. And I'm writing a book and I want to get that done. So bright times ahead.
Good. All right. Cool. Cool. So you have a new box set that's out. Let's get that link up here real fast. And this, for a game with, let's say, over 30 years of history.
Let's see, we came out in 87. So that's 33 years. In an ad in Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine.
Yeah, some of us remember that buying that issue very, 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 very well off the newsstand.
You know, I thought it was going to really, I had no idea, would people buy it, wouldn't they? Nobody'd really ever combined those two things before. Yeah. And luckily, like I said, it built a following and it just kept growing. Yeah. We were in PWI practically throughout the whole 90s. So we were always the background. You know, people, even if they didn't buy the game, they knew it was there, whoever bought it, get that magazine. Yeah. And I would change the lead character in the ads every couple months because I found, let's say, for this new ad, I would write, let's say, Wolf, who is on the cover of the box right there.
Yeah.
The one that looks like Wolf with the fangs. And but then I'd find after about 3 months, people had seen it, and then it would just sort of drop off. Then I'll put in somebody else. It might be Star Warrior, Endgame, or Bishop Hell. And it would always pick up again. So throughout the 90s, we were always featuring ads with different characters.
Great timing, you hit the second big wrestling boom in the 90s.
Yeah, and that was fun. That was fun times. And when wrestling does good, we do better. I mean, I guess that's natural. So I'm waiting for their next big boom. Somebody do something about it.
Fingers crossed for AEW.
Oh, good. Okay. I've heard
somebody. Yeah. Do we want to discuss the state of wrestling right now, or is that too depressing a subject? Is that like
It's pretty depressing for me. I have hope. My big hope is that when Triple H finally takes over WWE, the whole promotion will be more like NXT rather than the other way around. But we'll see. And, you know, just anything other than what AEW is putting on right now. That's kind of my big wish.
Yeah, whenever I talk to wrestling fans, I always get the same thing that comic book fans are saying these days. There's a few bright spots, but there's an awful lot of content there we're not big fans of. So.
Yeah, but and also like comic books, but you know, blessedly the older stuff is more accessible than it's ever been.
Indeed. In fact, for comics, they've been putting out the facsimile editions, which some months outsell everything else on the stands, which back in Dan Didio was still running things that was much to his chagrin.
I love those, and I buy both the DC and Marvel ones.
Speaking of comic books, Tom, I'm showing a picture right now of you and Mr. Stan Lee up on your... You used to work with Mr. Lee back in the day?
Yes. Yeah. He was the main influence on me. I actually call him my third father because I already had two. I thought, well, if I can have two, I might as well have three. So I had the father that, you know, birthed me, but then I never really knew him very well. He was gone. And then my second father adopted me. Mm-hmm. My name at birth was not Tom Filsinger. It was Athanasios Tsagarakis. Can you spell that, do you think? Athanasios Tsagarakis. And so I wish I'd kept the name. Oh, no, wait. I forgot my own name. It was Savas Tsagarakis. And I'm sure that if my first name was Savas all my life, it would have changed everything. I would have had 10 times more dates, and everything would have been great. But anyway.
I'll get a run in.
Oh, there it is.
Hi. Let's see the Celeste Miller's music.
A run in.
Oh, my God. I was sitting there going to the Google Meet link.
I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
Nice to see you again.
Yes, you too. It's been a long time.
I know. At a convention.
Yeah.
Probably Origins or something like that.
I think Gen Con was the last time, and that was, oh my God, 2004?
Could be. I used to go a lot.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah.
Well, Cynthia, yeah, so glad you can make it tonight. Thank you for coming.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. Sorry it took me so long, but I'm inept, so, you know.
Oh.
Technology
it's just more dramatic. It's more dramatic this way.
The main eventer always comes on last.
Right.
So Tom was just talking about his connection to Stan Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Cindy knows some of this, but, you know, he was a big, big influence on me. Like, for the writing and creating of characters, big influence.
Oh, yeah.
Wrestling, too. But wrestling more in the game mechanics and in the angles that you run when you run a promotion. So, you know, you're combining two different elements in one in this. Anyway, okay, so Stan Lee, I was telling you, he's my third father. That's where I was. Mm-hmm. And he was my spiritual father, my creative father, because I was young when those books came out. But I don't know if Chris is able to say that. Or anybody else here. And so I was buying those when they came out, and it was an amazing way to experience the Silver Age of Marvel as it was happening. And it was like watching, you know, Michelangelo paint, you know, Sistine Chapel in my eyes, you know. Well, anyway, in the 90s, I just thought, I'll write to Stan Lee. Somebody gave me his email address. I thought the worst thing that can happen is he just ignores it. But he didn't. He wrote me a full-page letter back.
Wow.
It was longer than the one I sent him. And then he said at the end something I'm going to put on my tombstone. He said, you must be some kind of cool college professor. And I thought, whoa, Stan Lee, what a guy, you know?
I mean,
and then I thought, well, since we're talking, I'll just stay in touch. And he, you know what's the big thing here? He respects education. He respects his generation did, but he did even more because he didn't go to college, but he was very proud of the fact that he was a voracious reader and always was interested in words and turns of phrase. In fact, in our emails back and forth, when we became friends after a while and just communicated to each other, he would, it would be word games, it would be puns, it would be the kind of things the Marx do. And it would always turn a phrase. I kept them. Anyway, so then I sent him some of my stuff I created, just because I thought, again, I've got his ear. Right. And he loved some of it and said, would you do a book with me? Well, Stan Lee could have said to me, would you do a Tupperware party with me? And I would have said, right away. And because I do them all the time. And then we did. We did a book of election humor. God knows we need election humor now, but I don't even want to get into that. So, so we did that, and we toured together. And he was, let me just quickly add, he was everything you wish your hero would be. He was kind, respectful, funny, thoughtful. I can't say a negative thing having known him.
So yeah, sounds like he was pretty much the way he came across in the old soapboxes and stuff then.
Yeah. Yeah, he sure was. I mean, you know, he was like an adult child. He didn't, and you could see at the end of his life, he didn't function too well in money environments. And as you heard, at the end of his life, there were people trying to get money from him, and he had a are you guys aware of that tough ending he had that was people talk about? People trying to cheat him. Well, I could see why. He just was a fish out of water when it came to the business parts of doing what he was doing. And he just wanted to have fun and create things. And he thought, well, I'll do that with this guy too. What the hell? Why not? I don't care. And he did it with me.
Oh, cool. So you're a big fan of the Silver Age, it sounds like.
Oh, well, that shaped, that was everything to me. It was literally everything. I used to draw and create my own little black and white comics. I used some of the Marvel people like Spider-Man. I used the second main hero in my line, and I'd like to think I was way ahead of my time on this, was Black Panther. And I think it's because it was a little easier for me to draw as a kid. Actually, I think that was part of it. But I liked the character. I liked the character. And anyway, so I would draw the comics. I'd buy them. And it ran deep. And then, and Cynthia brought up the Stan Lee soapbox. Stan Lee had this gift that I try to emulate. I don't really have to try. It just became a part of me, too, where I relate to fans that way myself. As friends. And but he did that. He did that with thousands and thousands of people across the world. Y'all thought Stan Lee's my friend the way he talks directly to us. And in meeting the real Stan Lee, that was never a put on. That was just him.
And to me, that's a huge part of the success of Marvel in the Silver Age when they resurged in what, 61, is with the Fantastic Four, is his personality came through.
Absolutely.
And when he was speaking to you in the soapbox pages, I mean, he made you felt like you were part of this inclusive club that only you and maybe a few other people were, you know. And I think that was a huge, huge part of their success.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of talk of who was more important in the Silver Age, Stan Lee or Jack Kirby. And some people say Steve Ditko, but really it's Kirby and Lee. And I totally recognize and utterly respect what Jack Kirby did. And you couldn't have had it without either one. It's like the Beatles without Lennon or McCartney. It's not the same.
Lightning but in a bottle.
Stan, what's that?
Lightning in a bottle.
Yes, but Stan Lee is the one who's able to sell the ideas.
Yep.
And I don't even mean that in a crass way. It was just his enthusiasm, and he was editing the whole line, so the line had cohesion. And it was small enough still where it could be cohesive until you get to later years where now it's expanding and expanding. It's hard to keep, you know, now we're fighting Dr. Octopus for the 80th time instead of the first or second or third time. That's easier to work that way. You know, it's hard to keep reinventing those conflicts over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's there's a long dissertation to be written about how modern comics are trying to keep on that treadmill, the same stories or variations on those stories over and over. And DC, of course, is having quite a bit of trouble right now. But I don't know if you guys were aware, but one of our panelists here, Mr. Christopher McLaughlin, wrote Silver Age Sourcebook for Mutants and Masterminds back in the day.
Yes, yes, indeed.
And I wrote Omlevex, which is my love letter to the Silver Age back in 04.
Yep. Okay. Great book. Great book. Thank Great you. Book.
Yeah. So what do you think it is about the Silver Age that inspires so much role-playing, you know, compared to, say, the modern era or other era? It seems like the Silver Age is really fertile for that. What do you guys think that is?
It's pure. I mean, everything's possible without the taint of a bunch of cynicism. I mean, you still have a little bit of that in the Bronze Age, but it's not as pure. I mean, there's something about the Silver Age, even to me, even more than the Golden Age, because the Golden Age was a little stodgier, you know. But man, the Silver Age to me is just so pure. I love it.
Chris, well, I agree with that.
And it was also a time in comics where you had competition back. You know, we remember the Golden Age fondly because you had National creating most of its legendary characters, you know, whatever Martin Goodman was calling timely or Marvel or whatever at that moment, you know, creating Captain America and characters like that. And Fawcett was outselling them both. And there are companies that were big then that have forgotten now, like Quality. I'm a big Quality fan.
I love Quality too.
But the artists they had working for them, like Lou Fine and those guys, and you know, in the 60s, you know, you get the beginning of that great Marvel versus DC rivalry. And there is something to be said for competition. It really did seem to bring out the best in Marvel, and a lot of underrated DC books made in the 60s as well. I mean, I think you clearly have to give the edge to Marvel on the whole, but, you know, you can't sleep on 60s DC. You know, you'll miss Arnold Drake's Doom Patrol and little delights like that.
Yeah, DC suffered from the comparison in the 60s because Marvel did obviously feel like something new and fresh. And DC was, you know, basically still repeating their formula. And I think what I've read is they were confused about what was actually working for Marvel. And they didn't, you know, they thought they had a system that they liked, satisfied their fans, and that Stan Lee and Marvel were some flash in the pan thing that was going to go away. Because they knew Stan Lee had been in the business 20 years, and to them, he was just another guy. But a new side of Stan Lee was coming out. He's a good example of you can be middle-aged and be very creative, because his greatest Thank work God. Came when he was after. Yeah. Or how about Senior Citizens? His greatest work came in after 40.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I think that the easiest way to compare DC and Marvel in the 60s was that DC largely created their cover first and said, make a story based on that. Where Marvel crafted their covers to sell that specific story. And I think that says about everything. And that's not a knock on DC. Their formula, you know, worked.
Sure.
I just don't think that in the 60s they were as innovative, because, you know, that's pretty symbolic of it, I think.
No, and they had to catch up.
And credit where it's due. Without Julie Schwartz taking a chance on the Flash in 56, there may have been no comic industry.
Right, that's right. For anybody else
to write with.
No, that's true. I've gone back to read all those too. The early Silver Age DC, Green Lantern, Flash, Justice League. Mm. They're good books. They're good books.
Yeah.
A lot of they're very complex. You know, DC could get. In one issue of, let's say, Justice League, would be five issues Marvel Comics. In other words, they would break it down, continue, then keep going, continue. And I didn't mind that. But what I was always amazed by how much plot they got in those pages.
Oh, yeah. And you were talking about Stan's voice, and I was reminded of We're getting ready, hopefully soon, to go to press on the history of Sentinel Comics. They for those of you who don't know, Darren Watts and I wrote a history of the fictional comic book company that publishes the fictional comics that the Sentinels of the Multiverse card game is based on. And we wanted to throw in shout outs to all our favorite comic creators, you know, so we sort of came up with like their alternate universe versions. And it was so much fun writing for like our version of Stan Lee, because he was the easiest one to get. It was like in every sentence with an exclamation point.
Yeah,
he was the by far the easiest voice to get. Now, when it's like, now what would like Mort Weisinger sound like? I'm like, ah, geez, but Stan, just yeah, keep it punchy, easy, yeah. Keep it short, keep it upbeat, and there you go. His voice is just so easy to capture. You know, that's it's amazing.
And I had a lot of fun doing much the same in the old Omlevex book, because the guy who created supposedly that comic book company sounded, you know, in my head a lot like Stan. I mean, how could you not make him sound like Stan, right?
Yes.
Well, you know, one way that you saw how playful he was something he didn't need to do at all, and that's he made the credits always playful. And they were always different, like written in the heat of the night by Stan Lee, drawn in the whatever. There'd always be leading up to the pun at the end, lettered in the other room by, but it was different every issue you bought. And so the energy was contagious.
So Chris, Sentinel Comics rule book, you can see it here on Amazon, available for purchase now. It's out. Your guys' history is not out yet.
Yes, we got assigned a top-notch editor who I'm excited to work with, and I think and I'm very thrilled about what she's going to do with the book. But our manuscript got KO'd by her going on maternity leave and COVID hitting.
Oh yeah.
Yes. So it's in the pipeline. We're starting to see art for it. It was great. This was something Darren really enjoyed. Darren was the guy who got to go to various artists and said, you know, can you give me a Jack Kirby? You know, can you give me a Dave Cockrum? And you're just finding people that could do these great homage pieces.
But
it's still in the pipeline. It's still coming. I've cashed the check, so I know it's coming out. They got to make their money back somehow.
So Q1 21, or do we know?
Well, it's in the pipeline. It's being worked on. That's the last I've heard. I've had to focus on keeping track of my own little venture here. Go show
press. Okay.
Yes. So, but I'm sure it's in great hands, and I'm hoping people that really know their comics history will dig it.
So TBD, and we'll certainly have you back on to talk about it once it hits the stands, as the kids say. So
yes, indeed.
All right, cool. Great. So I guess, Jess, we're getting towards the half-hour point. Just to sum up, Champions of the Galaxy is a great hybrid RPG/card game available now. Sounds like philsingergames.com is the best place to get that. Is that an accurate statement, Tom?
Yes, that is.
All right, cool.
And now that Cynthia is here. Oh, go on, yeah.
Before we let Tom go. There's a question I've been waiting 20 years to ask him.
Oh, here we go.
Okay. All right. So I love the legacy cards that you're doing with the wrestling legends. And I love how, you know, you've gotten to deal with all these guys face to face. You don't have to name any names, but you have to have at least one really good story about negotiating with pro wrestlers.
Phew, more than one. let's see. I guess Terry Funk comes to mind. I didn't get him. But he kept me hanging on forever in not doing so. He'd say, I'd see him somewhere and I'd say, look at all these people in this game. Our fans really want to see you fight so-and-so. And, I don't know. Ask me next time. All right. Okay. Next time. Well, ask me again. One time I got him on the phone in a bad mood. And he was getting on an airplane. Yeah, Terry Funk in a bad mood is not good. Mm. So he was on an airplane, and I tried again there. And he that time he got angry and basically hung up. He just was in a mood. That's all. It wasn't. He apologized for it next time I saw him, but still didn't sign. So. that's my best non-signing story.
Oh, okay. Old-time wrestling. Okay, so you called him on his cell phone. You didn't actually get to call the Double Cross Ranch.
No.
Because if you have the phone number for the Double Cross Ranch, I'm just my list of things I'm jealous of you about will grow tremendously. That you could just pick up the phone and call the Double Cross Ranch. That's like, it's like having the phone number for parts unknown.
But, you know, I got Bruno Sammartino, That's another no, because but he was very polite and nice about it, because when he called my house and my daughter got it, and she's well, he returned my call and my daughter got it, and she said, some Italian guy on the phone. Okay. So anyway.
Some Italian guy.
Yeah. I was like, all right. I said, you know, then you know, sometimes you're not prepared for these calls. You're like a little nervous. He said, hello, Tom, this is Bruno Sammartino. And I was like, I said, hello, Mr. Sammartino. He says, Bruno. He says, you call me Bruno, and I call you Tom, which was nice. Wow. He ordered me to do it, so what am I going to do? And
yeah, you don't complain, right?
But he was nice, and I'll make this fast. Then I spoke with Dominic DiNucci.
Whoa.
Remember him? Maybe a week later. And I said to Dominic, yeah, I spoke with Bruno the other day. Dominic said, you're a liar. Like, I think he figured that mere mortals don't talk to Bruno. I said, well, you know, what can you say? He's another one I met later who said, I'm sorry, I didn't. I just thought you were bragging or something.
Now I'm totally gonna picture. I'm totally gonna picture your home life. It's like the phone will ring. Your daughter will pick it up. Dad, somebody's on the phone. He keeps going. Woo! I don't know who he is. But...
Well, Macho Man called once, left a message.
You talked to
No, I didn't. I didn't. It was on my answering machine. And the thing that gets me is, I thought it was a prank because he really talked like that. He was like, hey, Tom, this is Randy Savage, you know? And I thought, this is one of my friends.
Is he working me?
And then I looked at the phone number later, and sadly, I never got to talk to him because he died shortly after that. Remember, you know, he had that heart attack.
Yeah.
But yeah, he talked like that. I still got it. I kept it. I recorded that.
Right?
Man. Sometimes K-Fab is life, right?
Yeah.
Hey, there's one thing I want to mention to you, Tom. I wish I could have gotten these guys on the show, but they're writers and they're busy. But there's a comic that just came out. It's on Comixology. It's called Invasion from Planet WrestleTopia.
Oh my!
And I had Chris on the show to talk to these guys because it's a combination of superheroes and wrestling. There's a guy who's a wrestler who's kind of long.
I
in
wish
the
I thought of that.
Yeah, he's basically getting told, you're not going to win the next match and just make it look good. And so he goes out there and says, I'm the best wrestler in the universe. And anyone who wants to challenge me can come on. And somehow the signal gets to Planet WrestleTopia out there in the cosmos. And those guys are PO'd to hear that. And so they all show up and they invade Earth to wrestle him. And it's a miniseries.
Wow.
Starburns Industry Press, that's Dan Harmon's comic company. You can get it all on Comixology right now. But it seems like it'd be a natural synergy between what you guys are doing with it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Thank you for letting me know that.
I clicked on a random panel. It was the alien invaders attacking the White House. And like the alien invaders and the Secret Service are trading wrestling moves. And there's just something so appealing about a comic that just assumes kayfabe is real. You know, if you walk up to somebody in the street and put them in a Boston crab, you will, in fact, inflict excruciating pain and they will have to tap out right there on the street.
Well, love I that. Just picked up one of those reprints of Thor versus Hulk in the Mystery 112.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes.
It's classic.
Yes.
The point is this. Read it again sometimes. Jack Kirby draws that fight like a wrestling match. They are exchanging moves back and forth. You know, I mean, it is. It's and Jack Kirby's great at that sort of thing. But it stands out if you ever want to read that again sometime.
I marvel at Jack Kirby I'm for various reasons, but I think the one that really stole my heart was when I was rereading the classic Lee Kirby run on Fantastic Four, and there was some random shot. It was an Inhuman guest appearance, and like Lockjaw was in the background. And was like doing things that only bulldogs do. And I'm thinking, okay, Jack either had a bulldog or he's actually studied these little furry weirdos where he's got them down to this frightening degree. And I'm like, hats off to you, Jack.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
That's a man took his job seriously. Yes. All right, so starter sets out now. That's a good place for people to go. What is on the horizon for your game?
Let's see. We've got a lot of holiday releases. We've got a new Legends set coming out. It's got some really good people in it. And I think the fans already like a lot of the people we've announced. We just announced Adrian Adonis, and so he's new to our game. And you see some more now. That's some other sets there. We just released a Hall of Fame set, the George Tragos Hall of Fame, and I believe it's Iowa, but I'm not positive that's where it is. But you know, but so they gave us some names that we could work with there. We release indie cards. So we have holiday releases for Champions of the Galaxy Legends and some indie stuff too. See the fabulous Moolah down there. And yeah, and then there's a lot of the indies. So, you know, we're covering a lot of bases with our stuff. And a lot of the wrestlers work with us because they know we've got a good product and we're above board on everything.
I'm stoked about Mil Muertes. I'm just saying.
Cool. Yeah. That sounds great. Yeah, Cindy, I was going to ask you, because this came up earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. How would you classify Champions of the Galaxy? RPG?
You know, that's the beautiful thing is it defies classification. I know that sounds cliche, but I've tried to explain it to people before as a chart and dice game, as a role-playing game, as a card game, and yet it's all of those things and none of those things.
Yeah, I agree.
So I usually just say it's, as he said earlier, a pseudo role-playing game, because that's how we play it. In fact, we played last night, because I got right in that room. He's like, man, this doesn't make it to our table nearly enough. And so we broke it out and played some battle royal, two battle royals, three matches. And
you made up your own battle royal rules?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'd like to see those sometimes, because I've never myself created anything I really liked.
Yeah, I will. I actually need to get that, because the computer that I had them on is long since dead. So all I have is the printout. So I need to actually get on there and lay it out all pretty, because when I made those, I didn't know jack about layout. So I'm going to like make it look all nice, and I'll send it to you and see what you think.
Yeah, because it's tough with all those interactions going on. I didn't know how you could how to focus the match.
What I basically did is you have two stacks of wrestlers, roughly half, you know, as close as half as possible of the stack. And then you cut them, and then those two are the ones that the camera is on at that particular time. You assume that the others are out there, you know, beating the crap out of each other with no actual effect. But those two are the ones. And then I have some charge stuff. And then when there is an elimination or an elimination attempt that fizzles out, then it switches to two more wrestlers. And it flows real smooth. And I'd say overall one takes about 30 minutes, give or take.
How many participants?
Well, we did, the ones we did last night were 30 man.
So, wow. Okay, yeah. Wow.
And they go pretty fast. Now, one of those did go like ridiculously long because Ming and Bruiser Brody just would not stop.
Well, you would expect that.
We eventually ousted him, but it was like, geez, finally. And like the camera would go to someone else, but inevitably come back to those specific two. They wouldn't fight anybody else. No, it was crazy. And they just would not stop.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Well, I want to see those rules.
Yeah, I'll send those to you.
You know, absolutely. Just as a thought, people these days are playing RPGs and other games online.
Mm-hmm.
Public consumption on YouTube or Facebook or Twitch is big for that. You might think about that. You know, it's a way to get some more eyeballs and spread the word. So just an idea.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, all right. Well, hey, Tom, pleasure to meet you, sir. Thank you for coming out.
You too. Nice to see this all-star cast here today. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for the conversation.
Yeah. Always great when we have a little New Gamers Order reunion.
Yep. Yep. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Mike, for having me. And I will leave here.
Oh, just give me a second. I'll do an official sign-off. So
okay.
Just give me one sec. Chris, always a pleasure to have you, sir. Thanks for co-hosting.
Very, very glad to be here.
Yeah. Cynthia, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much for coming back. And to all our listeners and viewers out there in the internet, we will see you next time on the BAMF podcast. And now I hit end broadcast, and there's an awkward moment when